All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuck nicks? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. Been doing it a long time. It's your first time here? What's going on? How'd you hear about us? Welcome. Will you fill out a comment card? Could you fill out a comment card, please? We just want to hear how we're doing. We'd like to know if our service was good and what your experience was here at the podcast. How's it going, folks? You all right? It's fucking horrendous here. California, goddamn oil spill off the coast. It's like the shit never fucking stops. Never stops coming. It's like it's time to abandon this fucking state, I think. But you know what? On the plus side, the COVID thing is pretty low here. But there's no moisture, no water. The entire state is kindling. Half of it is on fire, usually. And now there's fucking oil sludge killing fish, maiming ducks, and making it impossible to enjoy our coastline. Because what the fuck is wrong with these boats? It's just like one thing after another. I'm sorry. What's going on with you? I'm okay. It was just on my mind. I'm all right. Look, you guys, Julie Delpy is on the show today. You know her, all right? She has a lot of fans, actually. She's an actor, writer, director. You know her from the Before movies with Ethan Hawke, Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, and Before Midnight. And she's a gem. She's a goddamn gem, people. What a great lady. What a great person. She brought me a present. Do you know there's a certain type of person that appreciates when they're going to be a guest at someone's home? Look, I know that I'm just another stop on the junket for some people. And I know even if they know the show that that's the case. And, you know, if I have them, which most of the time I do when people do my show, I'll give them a nice present. And there's been a couple of people that have brought stuff here, and I always remember it. Because it's a nice gesture, and it's something that I don't do enough even. Sometimes when I'm invited to parties, you're supposed to bring a bottle of wine. And then, like, I'm one of these people. Sometimes I'm like, well, we forgot to get the wine. But I'm sure they have everything they need. That's not the point. And Julie Delpy brought me a beautiful book. It was a Tashin book, which is already great. A Tashin art book. Hieronymus Bosch, The Complete Works. I guess it says it's the 40th edition here online. But it's beautiful. It's hardcover. And he did all those amazing apocalypse paintings. And the reason she gave it to me or went out of her way to bring it or buy it from me was because she saw End Times Fun. And I thought that was lovely and thoughtful. And I'm her fan forever. I liked her before. What a sweet fucking thing to do. And what a cool goddamn book that is. She's got this new show on Netflix called On the Verge. I watched all of them. It's got Elizabeth Shue is in it, who I haven't seen in a while with Julie. Sarah Jones is in it. She's done some great work. This woman, Alexia Landau, is in it. And I didn't really know her, but she's great. And I haven't seen Elizabeth Shue in a long time. Have you? Maybe she's been doing stuff. I have a very, like, she's like, has a place in my mind that's not great. To be honest with you. And it's just one of those fucking awkward moments. And we've talked about this, man. It's the awkward moments that stay with you. The embarrassing ones. The painful ones. Before I get into that, though, I do want to talk a little bit about when James Murphy was on, from the guy from LCD Sound System. When he was back, when he was on the show back in July, he said the band wasn't ready to start doing shows again, but he would let us know when they are, and they are. It's happening. LCD Sound System will be playing 20 shows at Brooklyn Steel in November and December, and the ticket presale starts this Wednesday. But you have to register for the presale by going to youarehere.boweryprecents.com. You got that? youarehere.boweryprecents.com. Tickets go on sale to the general public on Friday, October 8th. Elizabeth Shue. Years ago, It was just one of those things where it's like that scene in The Player, you know? Can we talk about something other than show business? And they couldn't. So I'm trying to figure out what year it was, but my buddy Steve Brill, who was out here in Hollywood doing the Hollywood thing, heavy into it, was getting married. This was his first wife in Lexington, Kentucky. And I believe I was still living in New York trying to hammer it out as a comic. I had no sense of Hollywood or what it was like to be in show business. I was just doing the thing, living the life. So we get invited, me and my first wife, Kim. And it was kind of spur of the moment, like I was a last minute addition. That's happened before. Watch that episode of The Green Room on Showtime or whatever the fuck it was. It's a great episode with me and Gary Shandling, Apatow, Ray Romano, and Bo Burnham. Because I think it was just supposed to be Gary Shandling, Apatow, Romano, and Bo Burnham. They'd wanted me to be on a show. Provenza, the guy who runs the show, he had booked me on the show with Tommy Chong, Joe Rogan, and Rick Shapiro, I think. And I was like, I'm not fucking doing that show. And I loved Rick. But I didn't want to be stuck in the fucking weed pack as a sober guy. And I'm like, look, I said to Paul, I said, look, man, I don't need to do the show. I'm not hung up on it. And it's no harm, no foul. I'll just pull out. And he said, no, we'll put you on another show. And they wedged me into that panel with those guys. And it turned out to be a great show. But if you look at it, that episode of Green Room, which has become sort of a classic because, you know, Gary's no longer with us and Bo was a young man and people watch that thing. But I'm not even in an actual seat, you know, if you watch that. I was an afterthought. So Lexington, Kentucky, we do the wedding thing. So after the thing, there's a tent situation, a reception. And, you know, Steve's dug in here in Hollywood at that time. I'm just fucking doing comedy in New York. Steve is in show business. I'm not in show business. I don't understand show business. I do now. So I'm at this table with, he puts me at this table with the Hollywood people. Pete Berg and his then wife were there. Elizabeth Shue was sitting next to me with her husband. Is his name David Guggenheim? And I don't know any of these people. Me and my wife, Kim, are there, and we're kind of outsiders. I'm just a dumb stand-up. And these people are all doing the fucking Young Hollywood thing. And I'm like, who are you? I'm introducing myself. She goes, my name is Elizabeth Shue. And I'm like, oh, it's nice to meet you. What do you do? I'm an actress. And I'm like, oh, really? So do you have something I would have seen? Like, are you in a movie right now? And she says, yes, it's called Leaving Las Vegas, and it's coming out next week or something. Like, I just felt so small and fucking embarrassed. And like, all right, I'm not in show business. I didn't know. But you remember, man, right? You remember that feeling, don't you? Don't you remember that feeling? Yeah. So I just got back from Bloomington, Indiana. I go there every year usually, but I haven't been there in a few years because of stuff. But I go to the Comedy Addict, which is one of my favorite clubs in the country. It's a great place to work out, and I wanted to work out. Did 5 shows up there. The place seats only like maybe 120, 130. I'm not even sure. Intimate joint. And it's Bloomington, which every year I go back, I'm excited to play that club. But every year I go to Bloomington, I'm like, this fucking place, what is going on here? There's something weird going on here. It's a college town, and I get, you know, everyone kind of gets what a college town is. But this is a college town that's one of those ones that's stranded in the middle of fucking Indiana. And it's not the kids. I saw a lot of college kids. And you know what? They look the same as all college kids ever did always. It's sort of wild what doesn't change. But it's not the college kids. It's the people that never leave the college town, or the people that stay there, or the people on the periphery, the locals that live in the college town. There's sort of a, it almost feels like the college is built over some ancient darkness. I'm not sure what. But maybe they opened a portal in that quarry. Maybe they dug that hole too deep and something came out. There's some frenetic kind of weird dark energy pulsating through Bloomington. And I love it. I love it. I stayed at a different hotel this time because there's just too many memories. The old Marriott Courtyard, just too many weird memories. All consensual, all a bit like sort of like, wow, that was a weird weekend. Yes, Yes, that's Bloomington. That's Bloomington to me. But a few days there, great. Great shows. I want to thank all the people of Bloomington for coming out. Coming out to hear the new stuff, the dark stuff, the good stuff. All right, look. Julie Delpy is here. Charming, smart, great director, actress, writer. Season one of On the Verge is now streaming on Netflix. That's a show that she has on there, a series. And she brought me a very beautiful Taschen book. I'm telling you, man. Mandy Moore brought cookies. Ahmed Ahmed brought a mug. I remember shit. I remember shit. This is me talking to Julie Delpy. So, you were talking about New York? Was the first place you came?
Well, no, actually, wait a minute.
Yeah,
no,
what?
First I came to L.A., actually, but I had a horrible time in L.A., and then I went to New York and stayed for a couple of weeks.
What year is this?
88.
And what, you had a horrible time in L.A.? I don't feel like you like L.A. that much.
No, I do like it, actually. I like the weather,
yeah.
And I like the nature. And,
yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I go back to Europe all the time.
What happened in 88 when you got here?
You know, I do. Someone gave me something.
Yeah, like a drug?
Yeah. I was at the Chateau Marmont, and I jumped out of the second floor.
What?
Yes.
Stop.
Landed on bushes, broke a rib, tripped for 48 hours.
It's crazy.
Was at Cedar Sinai for 48 hours after that. And and actually, it was really weird. There was this really strange guy at the chateau at the time who was taking care of the chateau at night. He was like a,
yeah,
out of a vampire movie.
Uh-huh.
And actually,
88.
This weird guy that, yeah, I met in the lobby helped me up. I was bleeding everywhere. And it was Vinnie Gallo, I found out years later.
Vincent Gallo?
So it was like a horror, yeah, movie. I mean, a little bit dark.
Just because
he
had a featured role, so it made it kind of creepy.
I literally had a panic attack, like just from not just the falling, but the aftermath of like going back upstairs. And
oh, my God. So
yeah,
you,
yeah.
You don't know what it was?
No, I never found out.
And
no.
you were just with people and they were like, here, take this. And then you just...
I smoked something.
Oh.
So I don't know what it was. I guess it was pot, but maybe I had a weird reaction.
Something, you were jumping
PCP
off the balcony?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've had a bad experience with things you smoke, but it didn't last that long. This sounded like it went on a while.
Yeah. I don't know.
What were you here for? Was that the first trip to kind of
see what it was like, you know, L.A.? And I was at the hospital the whole time, tripping.
So,
and I never did drugs after that, not even like smoking anything.
Really? That was it?
It scared the hell out of me. I just never tried anything, never.
That was before you did any of the movies. That was just you coming here
to see. Well, I had done a couple of films in France, but yeah.
But you're like, I got to go to L.A. and check it out.
Check Hollywood. And
did you have friends here?
Killed myself. No, nobody. I was just going. I went to the chateau. I knew a couple of French people that were going there at the same time,
yeah,
the production company, and I went with them. And
do you stay there? Did you stay there a lot? I've never really been there. I've been there
once. I used to live there.
Really?
Because when Bellatz bought the chateau and fixed it,
yeah,
it was like completely kind of a disgusting place in the 80s and stuff. And he fixed it, revamped it, like the period and stuff. I ended up going like, I lived there because my friend was fixing the inside. He was,
yeah,
a
so you just lived
designer.
There?
So I lived there with a couple of gay men.
Yeah.
You know, every room, we went from room to room living there. I had the keys of the chateau forever. I could,
really?
Go there to the pool every night, you know, anytime I wanted.
When was this?
All throughout the 90s.
You just lived there?
Well, no, I lived almost a year and a half there, and then eventually I found a place.
Was there people
But I would
there?
Go to the pool there all the time.
Right. Was there like, was it open for business?
No, it was closed for business for a long time.
So it was just you and a couple of people,
yes,
hanging out in the hotel?
Yes.
And you'd just cook and eat and
yeah, I'd live half in the kitchen, like really a lot of fun. It was a lot of
that
fun.
That sounds like a nice thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So now this series,
yeah,
I watched all of them.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It's a lot of you. It's a lot of people.
It's a lot. Not just me.
I know.
Thank God.
No, there's a lot of people involved. I haven't seen Elizabeth Shue in a while.
Yeah.
So it was nice to see her.
She's great.
Now, what was the plan? I mean, because it seems like where you ended it, if you do another bunch of them, it's going to be all COVID.
Yeah, I mean, that's pre-COVID, right?
It's, well, yeah, but you did close with the sort of like the ominous.
What's next? Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Do you know, are you going to do an entirely masked season now?
The most boring season of all time in history of, I mean, of any or, TV show. That would be hilarious. An entire 12 yeah, episode of
just
masked
totally
people.
Peak COVID.
Yeah, yeah.
Or are you going to place it like at the end of COVID? Like you,
no, yeah. Actually, I was planning, if there is a second season, right. I don't know yet, but yeah. You know, it all depends on the algorithm uh-huh. with Netflix. But
how's that algorithm treating? Do you have any idea?
Well, I think it's okay, but you know, it has to be amazing for it to work out, you know.
Right.
It's a show about women in their 40s and 50s. Yeah. you need to, you know, it's like the dog with two legs at the pound, you know. It's like you need to be
somebody,
really beautiful and special to get adopted.
Yeah, somebody, you know, to like it. Yeah, yeah.
I'm not a cute puppy anymore, so you know, I might be put to sleep, like,
but it
straight,
seems like
directly
most of the audience, I mean, what is that, where's that Kaminsky method, that seems to do all right, and they're older.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know about the, yeah, but I think older is like you pass to another category there's wisdom and people look at you a certain way.
Like they made
that I talk about it in the show, the blind spot of,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
women, which is like, you know,
what
you
age
don't
you
really
thinking?
Exist anymore. Huh?
What age are you thinking where you don't exist anymore?
Like, I think 47.
Yeah.
Till about 65.
And then after that, you're just old.
The thing is that, you know, women don't really get much attention from, you know, whatever, 45 until,
yeah.
you know,
right.
65 or something like that. We're not grandmother. We're not, we're still mothers, but not really. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what's happening.
We'll find out. I guess it is sort of a weird zone.
Yeah.
But I mean, I find that like I think everybody's more interesting once they get past 45.
I think so too, but yeah. you know, it's a
cultural thing.
It's I have no idea. We'll see what happens. You know, it'll be a.
But the beginning, how do you? I got to ask you some questions though.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of like your the French sensibility.
Yes.
Around like when you grew up, who were like I have no idea. You know about French culture. You know, entertainment wise. So
yeah.
When you're growing up in France, you know, both your parents are actors.
Mm.
Like, and your father's in this, right? Briefly,
yeah, he has
on the
a
phone.
Brief moment, yeah.
But what were they involved with? I mean, what built your brain?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay,
you know, because like they seem like kind of interesting people.
Well, they didn't do like mainstream theater, anything. They
Ever.
Did very little. My mom a little more because she was coming from classic
uh-huh.
theater training. My
yeah.
dad. Started theater at the army in Algeria.
At the army?
Yeah.
In the army.
Army theater. He started, he became an actor in the army.
In Algeria.
Yeah.
Well,
Algeria.
Now,
yeah.
Like the Battle of Algiers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, he was in that, I mean, he was in that age group. It was
yeah.
the draft. They didn't
right.
have a choice. I mean, my dad would have
right.
done anything not to go, but, you know,
right.
he had no choice.
He couldn't be a resistor.
Well, you would end up in jail
prison.
Or mental institution or first. In the row of battle,
yeah,
meaning
oh, right.
killed first, you
right,
know, so
right.
they would like punish them by killing
Throwing
them, basically.
Wow. So what is theater in the army in Algiers look like?
I think it was a wonderful escape from, you know, not
yeah.
going. I mean, he was not meant for battle. He was like his dad had killed himself because of, you know, PTSD. So
really, from World War II?
World War One.
Really?
Yeah, really.
So you're wow.
So he was like really scared of. Ended up like this, like he went crazy and killed himself
yeah.
eventually, and so, you know, like he was really avoiding war at
right.
any cost.
Yeah.
So he ended up in, you know, doing accounting and theater eventually.
Right, just anything to stay off the front lines.
Yeah, exactly.
So
he would have been killed in 5 minutes because he was not ready to kill anyone. And
right, you, know, you,
so,
you sort of have to
yeah,
be ready to kill.
It's one or the other.
Yeah, and so, but did he have any training? That was the first time he did.
He
anything.
Had training just in the army, and then he went on and started acting when he came back to Paris, met my mother. They did theater together. They did really kind of, you know, different kind of theater.
Yeah.
They did auteurs that were kind of different, you
yeah.
know. My I remember when I was
like
9 years old,
yeah.
my dad played a woman in a
yeah.
play
yeah.
written by a guy named Copy, who was an Argentinian writer.
Yeah.
Who was very involved in the gay scene,
uh-huh.
also a lot of drugs and stuff.
Yeah.
But not my parents, but the,
yeah.
the world around them. And
are we talking the 60s?
60s, late 60s, early 70s, yeah.
Okay.
So and then 70s, yeah.
Exciting time in France.
Yeah, very exciting time.
Yeah. So they're doing weird kind
weird
of...
play. My dad plays women, yeah. You know. I've seen my dad change a, you know, women pad on stage, you know, like he had his period.
Yeah.
Like the other actor was with that underwear. I remember seeing his balls, like, right, you know, on the first. And it's not traumatic. It's funny for a kid.
I mean, how old are you then?
Like eight.
But you're with other people, right, in the audience?
Yeah, it's not a weird, I mean, it's funny. It's crazy, but it's it's quite funny, you know.
So they're kind of doing the kind of living theater at,
mad,
like, absurd, crazy
'70s
stuff.
Yeah, completely nuts. Yeah.
But no movies or nothing?
A little bit of movies. My dad was in a few films and stuff, but not really movies. They were into theaters, like, mostly.
So when you're growing up, like, what is entertainment in France? Like, I have this sense, like French comedy. What is French comedy?
You know, there was some good French comedies.
Yeah.
My parents were not crazy for French comedies. At the time, they were more, you know, into... You know, my dad was a Cinémathèque, you know, he would bring me four or five times a week to the Cinémathèque, and we would see Cassavetes, Bergman.
Oh, yeah.
Not really comedies that much. Maybe Woody Allen as comedies, but, you know, but not really, I mean, French comedies. Like, they weren't big. My mom would bring me to see a
few. What was that guy's name, Jacques Tati?
Yeah, they love Jacques Tati. Okay. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Jacques Tati was one of them. They like comedies that were kind of sophisticated, like Rule of the Game, like Renoir. You know, but it wasn't really like mainstream French comedies. A few.
Yeah.
Eventually, they started liking the those guys that did the Père Noël est une ordure, which is the Santa Claus is a Bastard.
Okay.
I don't know what it's. It's Mixed Nuts.
Yeah,
I think
they
made a remake in America, but it was not as funny.
Yeah.
And then, so it was mostly like independent cinema.
Yeah.
They were intellectuals. I mean,
so
they were not.
Right. So they were artists and they, you know, their sensibility was artists.
Yes, very.
And you're the only kid?
Yes. I mean, they were dirt poor.
Yeah.
That's for sure. No money
they
whatsoever.
They stayed poor?
They stayed poor, but they didn't care at all about money. I mean, it was, they didn't want to be rich. I mean, they never tried to be rich. They were always poor. The minute they would make a little money, we would go to a great restaurant, spend all of it, and it was gone. And I remember, like, when I was growing up, my grandmother was living with us because they were always out and doing theater at night and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And my grandma, and we had no bathroom. We were living, I know people can't believe it, but it's like I grew up without a bathroom until I was like 7 years old.
Where'd you go?
So we would all go with a washcloth at the kitchen sink.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I remember my dad complaining about my grandmother's white pubic hair
in the food.
So disgusting. Why am I talking about this?
I don't know. But it's important to
know. That's how I grew up.
Yeah.
No, and we would go to the toilet in the courtyard. There was a hole.
A hole in the courtyard.
Well, a hole behind doors. Like
it's called a
Turkish toilet.
So, right.
It's like
so
a hole.
It was meant to be
and
a
you
toilet.
Have to, yeah.
So just
and then I think once a week we would go to public bath to take a shower.
Oh my God.
With all the people that didn't have a shower.
So this is how you grew up for 7 years of your life?
Yes. Then eventually they bought they rented the apartment next door and were able to turn the kitchen into a bathroom. But tiny, like we're talking.
But it doesn't seem like, you know, I think for most people that would seem like if I heard this story in a different tone.
Yeah. Yeah, I could be crying saying that, but I'm not.
Exactly.
It's actually not traumatic at all. It's funny because, like, there's a lot of traumatic things in life, but this is not one of them.
Well, I think it must be because of the nature of your parents. They must have been fun, loving people.
Well, they were not unhappy.
Yeah.
They were extremely happy. They were partying a lot, you know, drinking every night. Yes.
And leaving you with your grandmother.
Exactly. Who was, like, pointing the finger at them saying, never be like them, Julie. Never be like them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So
she was the voice of reason.
She was like the old-fashioned kind of like, you know, folding plastic bags, keeping each of them, you know, kind of.
Oh, that's so funny.
I love grandmothers like that. I mean, my grandmother raised me, basically, and
I love that. Oh, but thank God she was able to tell you.
To tell me not to be this crazy person.
Did you, were you able to succeed?
Huh?
Did you not be that crazy person?
Yeah, no, I became very actually careful with my money. I mean, my friends sometimes say I'm a little tight with money, but, yeah, you know, I will take the bus to go somewhere even
now?
If I can take a taxi. Yeah. Yeah. I have this side of me that's a little bit
I think that people that grow up with, you know, like kooky, kind of like out of control parents of whatever kind, either they're going to be that or they're going to be the controlling kind.
Yes, yes. And I'm a little more on the controlling, even though I had a period where I drank quite a bit when I was younger. But
yeah. You sort of have to, right? Yeah.
I partied in my late 30s, yeah. late 20s, 30s, I was done already.
So when do you start, like, were you in shows? Did your parents drag you into the theater?
Sometimes. I did a few plays with them.
Yeah?
I was very scared on stage. And actually, I never did stage.
Always? When you were a kid?
Always terrified.
Really?
Terrified of stage and never ended up doing stage.
Really?
Probably because I was so scared.
And you don't feel, even now you think you would be?
I'm very scared of facing a public and yeah, I'm terrified.
Really?
Yeah, I'm a little bit.
Still?
I would never do what you do, for example. It's one of my main terror. I mean, I did have a band for a while. I did music on stage. It was different though. I was kind of like acting in my early 30s.
And what kind of music?
I played before the Pixies at festivals in Spain and then
really?
Yeah, at festivals. I was doing okay, actually. I was not a great singer, but I was doing okay.
Was it rock music?
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, and music you wrote? And,
yeah.
Uh-huh. And you had a band?
Yes, I had a band.
Well, that's different. I mean, because you can kind of get lost in that.
Yeah, and I was pretending to be a singer. Yeah, I mean, I was pretending. I was singing, but yeah. I was like acting as if I was a singer suddenly. You know what I mean? It was a different
thing. And also, like, I just started doing more music on stage.
Yeah.
And like, if you get into the music and you close your eyes, you don't even know you're in front of the audience.
Yeah, you can forget a little bit.
You can.
Also, I was making jokes. I was kind of like acting / you know, I was doing
some sort of rock and roll burlesque.
Yeah.
Of some kind?
I don't know. I was like, not stripping.
No, I know, but I mean like jokes and...
Yeah, a little bit to make
cabaret.
Myself...
Cabaret. I'm sorry, not burlesque.
No, cabaret. Burlesque.
Cabaret.
I wouldn't do. But yeah, it was funny. It was funny. I had a good time doing it. I really had a good time.
So when do you start thinking about acting like for real?
As a kid, well, I needed to get out of my house because I needed to have a normal life. So at 14, I decided I wanted to work and be independent financially.
So you moved?
So I moved legally. I was not allowed to move. My mom really didn't want me to move. So I moved the day of my 18th birthday to get out and I rented an apartment. I had it all planned already. But I was making a living by the age of 14.
Doing?
Acting.
Really?
Yeah.
In what?
I started with Jean-Luc Godard. In Detective, and then I went to do... I did three things with them, King
with
Lear.
And you were in his King Lear?
Yeah.
Wow. So, and you were how old? 14?
I was 14 in Detective, 16 in King Lear.
Now, working with that guy...
Yeah.
Because you're a director now, and this guy is one of the preeminent auteur...
I know.
...director guys, but it always seems like his process is not necessarily one to be... to model yourself after, but you must have picked up something.
Well, you know, when I met him, I said, listen, you don't have to cast me. I really just wanted to be on his set to see how he works.
How did he find you? How did you find each other?
I had put my photo everywhere at casting directors.
Oh, okay.
So I would do casting auditions and stuff.
Bring
you
in.
And it actually didn't go very well because I'm very shy. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was pretty bad. Actually, I'm really bad at auditioning.
Yeah.
All my life has been kind of disastrous. Like, I get panic attacks from being in a room auditioning. Yeah, I hate it.
Because of the people there? Again, in front of people?
Yeah, I feel being judged. And
maybe if you had your band with you.
Maybe. That would be good. Well, I'm sorry. I know I'm auditioning for this part, but do you mind if those guys are here? A bunch of guys
just
with their guitars.
Ready to play while you do your... So you're not great at auditioning because you freak out.
Yes, I'm really bad. I get really, it's like a horror movie for me. I get, the room starts to distort. And
oh, really?
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I don't like
it
either.
I get nauseous, and then I've very often run off.
I grew to get resentful of the people.
Well, your insecurity turns into...
Well, it's sort of like, who the fuck are you to judge me?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, this isn't even that good a script. Why am I even here?
Yeah. I know, but I'm not like, I haven't gone to that, you know.
You haven't gotten angry?
No, yes, I get angry.
yeah.
easily. I'm actually much better than I used to be, but I remember I used to have anger issues when I was most of my life, but
really?
I've been better for 12 years with my kid. Having a kid made me a less of an angry person.
Did it, or did it just make you, you know, behave yourself?
No, it's just made me less angry altogether, like happier, I guess, or something. I don't know what it is.
Oh, that's nice. So, okay, so you're going in for Godard.
So, now that I say I have anger issues. No, I don't really have anger issues, like, out of the blue.
I know.
It has like, to be created by something.
I get it. Yeah, you're not mad right now.
Huh?
You're not mad right now.
Not right now, I have no reason to be.
Good.
Yeah, I'm really mad. Why do you have a hammer here?
Well, I mean, some people are like that.
Yeah.
What is this shit?
Yeah, what is this shit?
So you go in for him. Was it intimidating? Did you know his work at 14?
Yes, I did. I had seen most of his films.
Really?
I was a big fan of his films. Well, my dad was dragging me to the Cinematheque
since
I was 5 years old.
Yeah.
So I had seen most of Godard films.
Yeah.
By that age, I would say all of them, if not all of them.
Huh.
And because my dad is obsessed with Godard.
He is.
And so So I met him and I was 14, and I think he was impressed that a 14-year-old had seen his entire, you know.
Uh-huh. And
so he hired me to act, because even though he said, yes, I could have you come on set if you want, but why not get paid and play in the film?
Yeah.
And that's it.
And what'd you play?
I played, my name was like the young woman with a clarinet, because I was playing clarinet at the time.
Yeah.
So I played clarinet the whole time.
Yeah.
And I was a very bad clarinet player. I've never been good at clarinet.
But that's what he wanted?
Yeah, like it was cute. I was like a young girl playing clarinet throughout the film. Didn't really make sense, but you know.
What was his, but
I
he
think
wanted
he
you
wrote
around?
The part. Yeah, I think he wrote the part for me to be there, because I wanted to see how he worked.
And what, how did he work?
It was intense. Like, it was intense. Like, he would sometimes go a bit angry. He had an issue with his DP. He was fighting a lot with him.
Oh, really? But was it all, was there a script?
There was a script, but we would give, we were given page every day.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if there was a script that he was keeping from us, and then,
No
one read a script. We
just
were given things once in a while.
Oh, okay. So he would suggest things. So it was improvised, or he would tell you what
to say? No, he would give us page the morning.
Okay. And that's what you were shooting that day?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
But did it seem, because like the movies I've seen of him, they seem kind of fragmented and interesting and almost not actor-like?
No, and it's more art than films.
Yeah.
You know, it's more philosophical.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
Right.
Yeah, I know. He's like the scientist of cinema to me. You know, he's more like a, you know, more than a filmmaker in a weird way.
Was he a nice person? Did you like him?
I did enjoy working with him. I did get along with him, and he was very kind to me. Very kind to me.
Interesting. So, the King Lear, I kind of remember when that came out. Who played King Lear?
Was it Burgess Meredith? And then...
Maybe it was.
It was Burgess Meredith, because that's how I met him. And then I was playing one of the Molly Ringwald was playing one of his daughter.
And I remember
Woody
this.
Allen was in it. Norman Mailer.
Peter Sellers.
Theater. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. I didn't see it, but I remember when
very strange film
came out. It was like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, it's a little bit still that feeling when you see the film.
You saw it because you're in it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you get into the mode of Godard, I think you start understanding his films more. I think now it's harder for me to get it than it was when I was younger, in a way, that I was used to seeing his films a lot.
He's still around, isn't he?
He's still alive. He's like 91, yeah.
Are you guys friends?
No, but he's always been very nice. Like, he writes letters on books to me.
Yeah.
Letters to me. He wrote a beautiful letter to me in one of his books, and, you know, that he didn't send me, but he published.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, that's nice.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice. And it was not, he was very, very respectful, very kind, very, very polite with me. He's not always like that with people. So I was lucky.
So you felt at least a little special. So did the Godard movies give you some profile? At least in France?
A little bit, yeah, in France only.
Yeah.
And then I went to do a Bertrand Tavernier movie. I did a Léos Carax movie. And then I did a Volker Schlondorf film when I was 20 with Sam Shepard. Sam Shepard was not an easy person to work with.
Oh, really?
No.
Huh.
Not really easy.
intense, like broody or like...
Like moody, like, yeah, like you didn't know which day it's going to be, you know. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah, it's, is it going to be a good day or
a bad day? I guess everybody has these periods, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was crying sometimes. I don't know what was going on. I just like, I was like just trying to...
Act.
You know, act and do the best job I could.
Did
and,
you train know. At all to act?
I did train, yeah.
Where?
I did some acting class for a while. But not really that much of training. I don't remember. I actually did the Actor's Studio when I went to New York.
Yeah.
And I did some classes in France. I trained more as a writer and director than I trained as an actress, actually. I went to film school, basically.
Where?
New York.
You did?
Yeah. NYU.
Oh, you did? You went to NYU?
Yeah.
So, and how old were you when you did that?
22.
Oh, so like you did the film program at Tisch kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But it's not really... I mean, the best training I've had is looking at those directors like Kieslowski, Godard, whatever.
Yeah, who I was worked with. When you were... Because you did some of that before. You worked with them before. So you had all this experience doing movies before you went to film school.
Yeah, yeah.
So you went to New York to do film school?
Yeah.
That was the plan?
Well, I wanted
not to... Not to be an actress?
No, no. I wanted to learn to direct. I mean, very early on, I saw someone like got out... some interview of me when I was 16 and I'm talking about writing and directing and
it was always the thing you wanted to do.
Always.
Yeah.
Always, because I was not so happy as an actress only. Like it made me feel unhappy. Like I wasn't.
Why? Because it
was, I don't know. It was a weird time.
All of
being
it?
A young, pretty girl.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was like, I hate it. You know, I remember I did a film once and I had like an equal part with another the other actress in the film, but she ended up dating the director. And at the end, she had like a much bigger part. And I was like, shit, I'm not ready to do that to get the bigger part. You know what
no,
I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be dependent on
yeah.
that crap. You know?
Yeah. Did you come up against that a lot?
A lot.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot. But I always avoided it. Like, it's never got to the point where I was in the room with that person, you know? I've
right.
always, I mean, maybe once.
You were never given, like, this choice?
No. Well, yes, but I was able to avoid it.
Oh, yeah,
Before I was, like, you know,
right,
fait accompli,
right,
like, right in front of my face.
Right,
I didn't
yeah.
have to run off, you know?
Right, right, right.
You know? You're I just mean, sort of... once, actually, when I was 13, but, you know.
13?
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah,
France?
Yeah. That's France, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I know. I remember my dad was waiting for me downstairs. I didn't tell him right away. It was the
was it an
the
audition?
Director's, yeah, the director's home, and I went and I waited to be in the subway to tell him. And I was crying and crying. My dad wanted to go punch the guy. He was so angry. And then he explained to me, you know, you don't have to be that. You don't have to do this to be a great actress. You don't have to be any of that. You know. He explained to me that I did the right thing, obviously, right?
Well, yeah, it must have been.
I mean, I threw something in the guy's face and left.
So he came at you.
Yeah, 13. Can you believe it?
Well, that was like pretty, like literally a horrible hands-on lesson.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
But then from then on, I was very...
You knew.
Yeah.
You knew that, like...
And I had the reputation to be a bit of a bitch because of that, you know, obviously.
To maintain boundaries and protect yourself.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that amazing?
But things
have changed now, which is good for young women now. Hopefully
it's getting better.
Yeah, hopefully.
Hopefully for 13-year-olds.
at least the 13-year-old can avoid it. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm laughing. I'm laughing because
it's
such a horrible thing if you think about it. You know, it's better to laugh about it than to cry. Right?
Now, but was the big, like, the big break was Europa Europa, though? Like, is that what
Agnieszka Holland was great to be in that one.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, I think it was a bunch of little break. Then starting the before when I was 24. Before Sunrise.
Right, but you did so many different ones, though. You did the three Colors movies, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you did.
White,
I remember Killing Zoe. I remember that
Killing
movie.
Killing Zoe also. Yeah, yeah.
That was a wild movie. Was that a bank robbery movie?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was kind of a good movie.
It was fun. Yeah, yeah, very fun. Yeah,
yeah, I remember.
Yeah, I did that as well. I forgot. Yeah, I did a bunch of stuff before.
But the dream was to write and direct. So, but you hadn't, when you came to New York, you were already a pretty established actress, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And was when you said, I'm going to NYU, were your agents like, what?
Well, I didn't really tell them.
Oh.
I just, you know, I realized very quickly that if I told agents that I was writing, they weren't too crazy for it. You know, they thought maybe I was wasting my time or, you know, yeah. they want actors to be dedicated to, you know.
And who did you study with over there? What was the, like, what were you trying to, what did you see as your path in terms of the type of things you wanted to write?
You know, I was into indie stuff,
yeah.
you know,
yeah,
I
yeah,
was,
yeah.
I liked Jarmusch and,
yeah.
you know, Spike Lee and,
yeah, yeah.
But I was also a fan of bigger films like, you know, I loved Miloš Forman was
wow.
complete. I mean, he's my favorite director.
I want to watch Amadeus again.
It's just so good. And the director's cut, the 3 hours, is even better.
Really?
And it's just brilliant.
I just I watched Cuckoo's Nest again.
I watched
recently.
It with my son recently.
Oh, really?
It's my son's favorite film now.
How old
and
is
he's
your son?
He's 12.
Yeah.
But maybe
he can
I shouldn't
handle
say.
It.
Yeah. He can. No, he actually wanted to know about, because we talked about. They talked at school a lot about mental issues
yeah.
because of COVID and everything.
Yeah.
A lot of kids got depressed and
yeah.
stuff. So he wanted to know about it. And
yeah.
I was like, I love this film. Do you want to see it? It's a little rough, but, you know,
yeah.
there's something to it that's very beautiful, too. You
right.
know?
Did that help him understand mental issues?
Yeah, no, he liked it
oh, yeah.
a lot. He said it's a beautiful film.
Movie. Yeah.
yeah.
I talked to Christopher Lloyd recently.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting to... Because like, he had a fairly prominent part in that movie. It wasn't like he was a star, but he's in that movie.
No, and he's great. Yeah.
He's great.
They're all great.
They are.
Oh, my God.
But you talk to those guys, you know, and they go right back to it. Like, at that point in their career, like, whatever movie it is, but sometimes I talk to these old dudes, and the ones that we're defining are the ones that seem like amazing movies. They can go right back to it in their head, and they get excited.
I'm sure. Because
you know?
It must have been a great
yeah,
moment in life.
It must have been crazy, right?
Yeah.
Do you have moments like that from movies?
No, I don't know. I don't remember so much. Like, I move on so much. I'm so much into
directing?
Next. No, in the next step.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I'm always
sure.
in the present or or projecting myself into next.
Are you anxious?
Anxious as
I mean, in general? I mean, do you have anxiety or?
Tremendous.
Oh, so yeah, you can't appreciate anything.
No. No, it's a horrible. No, my life is no. But I actually enjoy some shoot. I have to say, I've enjoyed directing a few films. There's some French film I did, like a film called The Skylab. Actually, it's an English title because it's based.
When did you do that? Oh, here I see.
12 years ago, I shot.
And it was a French movie.
It's a French movie. We had an amazing time.
No, but was it a popular movie?
Pretty popular in France.
Here, yeah.
I don't think it came out here. It's very French. Oh, sorry, I have to be closer.
Well, you can
it's
pull the mic
French.
Back there if you want. You okay? What's going
yeah, no,
on?
Yeah, no, I have like I don't know, my gallbladder is
really?
Out. Yeah, it's okay. It's anxiety, you know, it gets all tied up.
Do you need
up.
Anything?
No, I'm fine. I'm
and
fine.
You know it's your gallbladder?
Yeah, I think I have a bit of a stress gallbladder.
How would I, like, how yeah, would I know okay. if I have that?
You just have a pain right here. It's okay.
Because I have a little pain right there sometimes, but I don't know if it's my gallbladder.
That looks more like, if it's lower, it's the colon.
No, oh, maybe.
Sorry.
So you do a little...
medical. I can do a little medical.
Yeah, you spend a
I'm
lot of time?
Good. Yeah, a lot. I can actually help you out if you want with that stuff. No, but I mean, not specifically the colon, but, you know, the whole body from head to toes.
Well,
I'm very knowledgeable.
Really?
But yeah.
Why?
I don't know. Just it interests me. I only read science papers and medical papers. I don't know why.
But is it from panic?
I've always been interested
in the body.
Yeah,
But medical. It's not like WebMD stuff, right? You study things, but you're not always sort of like, oh my God, what's this pain? I can think I'm dying.
A little bit, but it becomes a genuine interest.
Oh, okay.
In
so
medical stuff.
You shift your panic.
Eventually,
and fear.
The panic becomes medical quickly.
Oh yeah.
Become research.
What's
you know?
Your What's your latest research?
Oh, I'm not going to go into it. Let's move on to the next subject. What was the other subject we were just on?
We were talking French movies.
Yeah,
we were
French
talking
movies.
About Skylab.
Oh, yeah. I enjoy shooting Skylab. I enjoy shooting
about?
The show, too, I have to say. This
what was
show.
Skylab about?
It's a family reunion the day before the Skylab crashed onto Earth. So it's set in 1979.
And you wrote it.
And I wrote it.
So what was the vision? Like, you know, what was it about Skylab arriving?
It was capturing one day in the life of this family, which is basically based on my family. Because my family is, my dad is very left.
Yeah.
And the rest of my family is very, and not the rest, but part of my family, some part of my family is very right.
Mm-hmm.
Politically.
Yeah.
So I remember growing up with major, you know, the dinners would always end up with, you know, people wear about to kill each other. Yeah. So, you know.
Right. So it was, okay, so it was.
But it's funny. It's very funny.
But did the Skylab thing bring everybody together? Was that, why was Skylab part
of it? No. They keep on fighting. No, but it's always this thing, you know, looming. What is, you know, the Skylab is supposed to fall onto Earth, and we don't know where it's going to fall.
That's what,
the news, that's what it
sure,
was.
Sure, right, right.
I remember
right.
my mom.
They were hoping it was going to be in the water.
Exactly. Yeah. And it did in Australia. But my mom at the time was convinced it was going to fall on my head. So I spent the entire week that summer on my head. That kind of mouth. That kind of mouth. So I spent my entire week that summer of, like, you know, being terrified that the Skylab was going to fall on my head.
So your mother was constantly worried?
Yes.
And that's why you're crazy.
Why are you doing?
Well, that's why you're so panicky.
Yeah, of course.
Because, you know,
out of all people on Earth, my head.
Right.
I know. It's
no, special. I had, like, my parents were kind of worrying people, and then it makes you nervous.
I know. It's
like,
very.
It's, because it's like. It's not, it's, they think it's some manifestation of love, but it's not. It's really just panic. It's your own panic that you're putting on your kid, and, you know, because you're afraid that something's going to happen to them, and what would you think about yourself if that happened?
Yeah.
So,
it's a projection of your anxiety. Yeah, I know.
Then you just end up
hope I'm not doing that with my son now. A little bit sometimes.
I don't think I ever thought about it for myself until just now, until talking to you. And I'm pretty rigorous about my brain. But, like, I realized that a lot of, there was a lot of worry. But I don't think it was genuine concern. I think they were more nervous for themselves than they were for me.
So it was just a transfer of their
kinda.
Anxiety.
Like
you think? Or I know I genuinely worry for my kid.
Yeah, okay.
It's not about me necessarily.
Well, I just think, like, I think that the thought is like, that would be awful if that happened to the kid.
Yeah.
Right. And like, I don't, like, you know, you get this fear. They have their own fear about what's going to happen to you.
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
make things up in their head.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like the character in the show.
Yeah.
Sarah, Jones's character.
Yeah.
Right.
Jones. Yeah. Sarah Jones. Yeah. She's worried about her kid all the time. She's imagining things happening to him. Yeah.
And then you react to it.
But it's a form also of, exactly. And I think she is like that also because she's, you know, she's trying to find herself, you know, also.
Right. She's also a liar.
She's a she's a liar. But she's happier when she lies than when she doesn't lie. And she's not very good at lying.
I tell you, man, I cannot, like, watching that show, I was like, with your husband, I was like, why are you staying with this guy? Like, he's like nothing.
he wasn't
even charming until the last episode.
She's trying really hard to make things work. And sometimes I find, I've seen it very often, I mean, I'm like that. I will try to make things work.
No matter what.
No matter what. Mm. Until suddenly there's a breaking deal kind of thing.
And then it all goes away.
But it's with friends. I mean, it's not just relationship. It's all relationship. Even work.
Yeah.
You know, I will try till the end to make things work with someone, even with work, until you reach a level where I'm like, that's it. Never again. Done. You know, and then it's done for
really
good.
Really done.
It's really done because it reached the limit 20 times. I will get to, like, I forgive. And then, but I thought it's an interesting quality for a woman also to be, you know, trying and accepting and being punched and punched and punched until she has to, you know.
But she's at the end of her rope.
Yeah. It's not like she's...
Because you can't be denied attention.
You can't be mad at her for doing it. I mean,
no,
if
you're
anything...
Not mad at her. Yeah. Like that guy's, he's unbearable.
Unbearable. It's just funny. He's good, though. He's good at being unbearable.
That actor. Do you know that guy pretty well?
I mean, I know. He's a friend.
Yeah.
Mathieu Demy, yeah.
So you know him from France?
Yes. We met in France, but we mostly hang out here. He moved to L.A.
Oh, he did too?
Yeah.
Okay. So... All right. So with the, when is the first, is Before Sunset the first big movie?
Sunrise.
Before Sunrise? No, I'm talking about the one you wrote.
Oh, yeah. Well, Before Sunrise I wrote two, but we didn't get credited, Ethan and I. We wrote Before Sunrise. Well, the first
because
one we wrote.
Because you were improvising or?
No, it's not that. It's because we didn't sign on at being writers from the start. So when we were hired to go to the set, yeah. We ended up changing all of it. It was not a rewrite. It was you know, we threw away everything and we wrote a new film with a few, maybe five
and
leftover dialogue of the original.
Linklater just let you do that?
He wanted us to do that. He hired us to do that. And then I think the guild, I mean, they couldn't, whatever. Who knows what happened?
Who wrote the original story?
Richard and another lady.
Oh, okay.
And but basically the final script with the original script is almost, there's maybe two, I mean, for my character, there's maybe four lines.
And was that
left over?
Is that because you and Ethan had to define the relationship for yourselves that
I
would
think,
compel you?
I think quickly Richard realized that the original screenplay was quite talky and there was almost no romance. It wasn't very romantic.
Okay.
First of all, they would separate.
And it's a romantic movie.
Yeah, it's very romantic. And I think he realized that Ethan and I would bring all that writing of romance. And I wrote a lot of stuff about how I felt as a young woman and I was very romantic.
Yeah.
You know.
Is that gone? Did you get rid of that?
it's not the same anymore. You know, like you kind of, you know, and it's beautiful for the time. I mean, I love that
people
film.
People love it. They love all of them.
It's very romantic, and I'm happy I was romantic in my 20s and that I'm not as romantic. I mean, I am romantic, but I'm also practical now. So it's a different kind of romantic idea.
Yeah. Well, I mean, As we get older, you got to temper your romance to something a little more practical.
Yeah, also to not get completely crushed every time something doesn't work out right. I mean, it's like you don't want to be like, if you're romantic like you're in your 20s, you won't survive. I mean, it'll kill you.
Yeah.
So you know, it's better to be a little more in the real world. But I was very romantic, beautiful romantic ideas. So I wrote them all in the film. You know?
Yeah. And that's what it was huge success.
And Ethan as well.
Yeah.
And we were both the age of the character. So it was more, we were more in tune with this romance than Richard was in his 30s. You know what I mean? Like we're in our 20s.
Are you guys still 30s. Friends, you and Ethan?
Yeah, of course. Well, we did two more films together,
I know, so. But I don't know. I always assume people.
We're not friends. You know, we've never been super close friends.
Right.
Because in the end, we just communicate during the time that we need to do this.
I think that's
films.
What happens with movies. Yeah, it's like, and I always learn this over and over again, and even from my own experience in doing movies. It's just, you know, when you see somebody establish something like, you know, three movies on screen, there's part of you that wants to believe that, they must, you know, really love each other or whatever. But yeah, no, it's just a job. And, you know, you do the work and then. And,
I know. And people ask me if I'm not, why am I not married to Ethan? And I'm like, why would I marry Ethan? My God. It's like the last person on earth I would marry, probably.
Wow.
No, but I mean, you know what I mean.
Yeah,
it's like
I
knew
him
inside out. I don't want to be married to Ethan.
Yeah.
You know?
Right,
and,
sure.
And,
spent a lot of time together.
That's
enough. At many different ages.
Yeah, exactly.
Through, it's like, you know, through divorces
30,
and this and that.
30 years. It's
that's
enough.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's almost 30. Yeah.
Well, how did that evolve into like a three-part thing? That wasn't the intention, was it?
So originally, no, the original screenplay added very strict end, which was that they would part and never see each other again. That was Richard's original screenplay. And when I was involved, I said, listen, I'm not the kind of person that would have sex with someone if I didn't. That's how I was at the time. You know.
It's okay to be that way.
No, but I mean, you know, I was a romantic person and I say, I'm not going to be with this guy unless I know there is a possibility of seeing him again.
Yeah. Oh,
so
it
has to be open at the end.
Huh.
It has to be an open ending.
Yeah.
Also, I've always liked open endings. Like, I finish my show with something open. I've always liked the possibility of something else.
Yeah.
You know, so I said, let's make it that they meet again. And we didn't want to exchange phone number because it seemed silly, you know, kind of like too down to earth in a way.
All right.
Let's make it a romantic idea of meeting again 6 months later. You know, so it kind of left the door open for a sequel in a way. And then when... Eventually, we were like, you know, a lot of people are saying, why don't we have a sequel? Because it is open.
Because people loved it? Did you find it was mostly women?
No, men too.
Oh, yeah?
A lot of people got married over
because
this
of that
film.
Movie?
Yeah, I know. It's really strange. We meet a lot of people.
Sweet. Really?
I'm responsible for a bunch of babies out there.
Oh, that's nice.
It's cute, right?
Yeah.
Pretty cute.
So when the sequel comes, so I guess Richard was like, well, you're going to write it.
I should
this
be
time.
The godmother of all those babies.
Yeah, you are secretly. Just claim it.
Ethan and I.
Yeah. So when the first sequel comes around, Richard just said, you're writing this then, right?
Well, yeah, this time it was obvious. I mean, I was not so happy with not being credited.
Yeah.
So was Ethan. You know, we were a little
bit. You were both mad.
Well, there's a good reason to be. I mean,
yeah,
if it had been in the Writers Guild's hand, there would be no question that they'd have been writers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So so this time we said, okay, listen, this time not the same. Because again, there was an attempt to like present a screenplay and be like, oh, and we'll work on set. I'm like, no, not this time.
Oh, you fought for it, yeah.
Yeah, not this time. I was not this
and
time.
And the same with Before Midnight.
Yeah, oh, well, Before Midnight, it was out of the question not to credit us because we're Ethan and I's writing is what those films are, you know. So.
And when you guys wrote together, did you sit there and write together?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean the for Before Sunset we did a lot. I sent a lot of stuff like internet. I mean, we did all sorts of ways of working internet,
but it was definitely
sending
connected.
Scenes and, yeah.
And you're credited as a composer as well.
Yes, I wrote music for The Countess, which is a period piece I made, which is a very weird movie about a woman that used to bathe in young virgin's blood to stay young forever. Mm. She was called Countess Bathory. Very gothic.
Yeah.
Somehow people love it in France. It's like my number one film, but here no one liked
you
it.
You did everything. You wrote, directed, acted, and...
composed the music.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because I come from classical music training.
Right.
So with clarinet and I was playing in orchestras and stuff. So I write for orchestras.
Mm. So you know how to do that?
Yes.
So you like to do it?
It's very relaxing.
The Countess is your biggest hit in France?
Not my biggest hit, but a lot of people think it's my best film.
Really?
And here people don't like it at all. Yeah, no, don't know it. Huh. What can you do?
Wow.
You know, French people have different tastes. Like my last film, My Zoe, people loved it in France. Here, not so much.
How do you account for that? What is it? What is it about France? What do they like?
I think because it's very unusual. It's not very mainstream. And also, I think there's no good feeling. How do you call it? Like, you know, all those British movies that at the end you're like rooting for hero.
Yeah.
And, you know, like
so
all
it's
the
just
typical.
Existentially challenging.
Well, it is very, very challenging.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is.
And people,
and people are like, blah, blah, it's so dark and the characters are unlikable. And, you know, that's the thing about the unlikable here.
Right. In France, so there's a sort
of. They love unlikable characters. They love, I mean, they have Marquis de Sade as a hero. So, you know, it's like not the most, like, you know, likable human being. So.
Well, I think that's interesting about, you know, countries that have real history. You know, when you really think about America, it's just a history of dreamers and possibility, whereas France has been through the shit.
Yeah, and there's a darkness that's accepted. You know, I think that's why people like, I remember reading Hubert Selby Jr., The Demon. I don't know if you know that book. It's one of my favorite books. And people in France love it, you know, and I know that's something that's, some directors started liking him, but really it was, you know, I remember the French loved him from a long time, you know, and it's very dark.
I think people here know Last Exit to Brooklyn, you know, right?
Yeah. But people, for example, in France love, and I love him too, Bukowski, Charles Bukowski.
Of course, yeah.
It's irreverent. It's rude.
Yeah.
It's
he did okay here, but not great. But
not
like you're
great in France. He's looked upon as a genius, and I believe he's a brilliant.
He is a genius, but here he's a cult figure. There he's like a celebrated man of letters,
almost mainstream American author.
Oh, interesting.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they have an intellectual tradition of.
It's a different like about darkness is different. You know, the sense of it's okay. It's okay to be a certain way. I mean, I'm not saying France is perfect. Far from
no,
it.
But
there's
like
a lot of things I hate about France. But.
But in terms of writers, like, you know, Camus was like, you know, The Stranger was a big book, right?
Yeah.
And it's, that's not a happy ending.
No, it's completely existential. Or even, you know, all Sartre's writing.
Yeah, yeah. I guess France
dark.
Is used to it. It's dark and open-ended.
Yeah, dark. Exactly.
So that's where maybe you got you like the open-ended.
Yeah. I like that.
It doesn't have to be dark.
Maybe that's the French side of the show, maybe. It's that kind of like my show, it's kind of like...
On the verge?
Yeah, it's not very dark, but, you know, maybe there is something...
Well, I think like, you know, what you're trying to straddle, like, you know, how long have you been working on that show, on the new show, On the Verge?
You know, truly, I worked on the pilot for many years. And actually, the pilot is my least favorite episode. Weirdly enough, I should have just kept it as the first draft that I had.
Yeah.
You know, I hate when I start to rewrite and take notes from 20 different studios. And it becomes...
Yeah.
Actually, the pilot is probably the least interesting thing because you know, I got too many notes, you know, and then it becomes
right,
a mush.
And they're all worried about, you know, setting up these characters. And
it becomes nothing. I mean, to me, the pilot is okay, but, you know, I think the show is better than the pilot.
And you made it with Netflix. So Netflix is the studio.
Yeah, well, it's Canal Plus, actually. It was French financing, and then Netflix acquired it. It's not an original Netflix.
How's it doing in France?
It's okay. It's doing well.
Did it get press?
Very good press.
In France?
Yes. I mean, people like me in France.
I know.
They hate me here, but they like me in France. No, they don't hate me here, but, you know, it's more of a, you know.
Did you shoot during COVID?
Yes, in the middle of it.
Hmm. So you did half of it during COVID with protocols?
All of it during COVID with protocols.
You shot all of it during COVID?
During COVID, yeah. In August, we started August 31st.
Oof.
And finished November right before it went up. It was in a dip of, and we didn't have one case of COVID.
That's good.
Yeah,
so you're doing
that,
like, tested every other day kind of thing?
Every other day.
Yeah,
we were all wearing
masks.
No one could hang out. No
Whoa.
One could have lunch together. Yeah.
Wow.
It was not easy. Not easy.
No, I know. I shot a movie during, it was only 2 weeks though.
Oh, you shot a movie? Oh, yeah. You shot a movie. How was that?
In peak COVID. It was, you know, you were so excited to be out.
That's exactly how we felt.
Yeah. And that, you know, like I was really nervous, but my management somehow convinced me that it was probably safer to be on the set than to go to Ralph's.
And they're right.
Yeah.
Because everyone was super tested.
Yeah,
and
all
you
the
knew
time.
Everyone. And you know what's fun was that everyone in the world was wearing a mask. And then we would take out our mask.
I know.
Hang out, love, kiss, hug, as if we were in the real world. We were the only one in this bubble of other reality that didn't exist for anyone else. It was kind of great, you know?
Well, and also, like, your ability to focus on the work is tenfold. I mean, because you're just sitting, you're literally, you can't even, there's nothing, you can't go hang around craft services. So you're just waiting.
Thank God.
Just waiting to work.
To work. Yeah. Yeah, the focus, I wouldn't say, and you know, you had minimal people on set. You couldn't have everyone just hanging out on set.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, listen, it's nice to have everyone on set. You know, eating while you're doing an emotional scene or whatever, or a sex scene, and you have half the crew. You know, no, a sex scene now, they don't allow people, but whatever. We don't have really sex scenes on this show. But, you know, I don't know why actually it says nudity on the thing, because I don't think there's any nudity in my show, or I'm so...
Just the one girl at the party showed
at the party, that's it. Like one pair of tits.
Yeah.
But that's enough for nudity. I don't know. Or maybe it's because, you know, in the credits...
Mm.
There's you see, actually, it's me. You see a pregnant woman and you see the breast. And maybe that's enough to make it, you know, like
maybe.
Nudity.
Sure.
That would be really not good.
So you had this pilot. You've been working on the pilot a long time.
I've been working on the pilot a long time.
Now, did you write with other people? Was there a room or did you just knock it out with one other person?
No, we didn't have a room. We didn't have the money for a room because it's Canal Plus and it's like, it was all scale.
What is Canal Plus?
Canal Plus is a French channel that finance most TV shows in France and most films.
Okay.
It's actually the reason why we have films in France is Canal Plus. But so I was working on the screenplay for a while. Of course, it went from me being 44 to me being 50. So the kid went from being 5 to being, you know, 12 years old because suddenly my, obviously.
You mean it took you that long to write it?
Not to write it, to get money for it.
Oh.
I wish it took. No, it's really about the.
So it's been hanging around.
Yeah. It's been like, you know, yes and no's and one place, then another. Then I took it back from one place and went to another place. And then
okay. I get
it's not easy. It was not an easy one.
And you had just the pilot?
Yeah.
Mm. And so once you got the deal, you.
I developed the 12 other episodes afterwards. And then that was fun, that part, you know, even though it was a lot of work. And I did it only with Alex Yalando, who's my co-writer, who plays Elle in the show.
Elle.
Elle is the lady with three kids.
Oh, she's good. Where'd she come from?
She's an actress. She was in my films, Two Days in Paris, Two Days in New York. She played my sister.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
She's French.
Yeah.
Actually, she's American and Israeli, but she was raised partly in France, so she speaks fluent French.
Yeah, I like her kookiness.
Yeah, she's very good.
Yeah.
She was very funny.
Has she done a lot of acting?
Yes.
Mm.
I mean, she has done, she worked with Zoe Cassavetes on her film or short film or a feature.
I feel like I've seen her before. Zoe Cassavetes movie?
Yeah.
I wonder which
one. But she was also in Two Days in Paris, Two Days in New York.
Yeah. Now I remember.
Yeah, she played my sister.
Yeah. I remember. And your parents were in those too, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And Adam Goldberg.
And Adam Goldberg in the first one and then Chris Rock in the second.
I kind of know Adam a little bit.
I changed boyfriend between the two.
Do you and Adam get along?
Yeah, we did for a while, and I don't know if we still get along. I haven't seen him in a while. I don't know if he liked the film. When he saw 2 days in Paris, I think he was upset at me.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I cut a bit that he did, and, you know, I don't know. I don't know what happened. He was upset at me after
the
film.
We're all kooky. He's got two cute kids now.
I know. I'm happy for him.
Yeah, yeah.
I have only good things to say about Adam. He's a fantastic actor.
He is, isn't he?
Yeah, he's great.
And Elizabeth Shue, like, how did that happen? I feel like I haven't seen her in decades.
Well, you know, it's like she's a wonderful actress.
I know.
Sometimes people don't work. I mean, also, I think, you know, some when people, you're offered, you know, I mean, yeah. I see movies sometimes, even good films. And then I look at the woman character, the 50-year-old woman character, and it's so underwritten that it's you know, you don't want to, who wants to play that part, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, I think that's true of a lot of roles.
Even for guys. I mean, truly, everything is so one-dimension sometimes.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's because people are used to, they want characters to be likable from the start. You know, I have this issue in my show sometimes. It's like people say, oh, the first and second episode, they're not really likable character. I'm like, so what?
I know.
Like, I grew up loving, you know, is King of Comedy any of the character likable?
Yeah.
They're fucking all crazy.
You know,
they should be all, I mean, even the hero that's supposed to be like, I mean, the Jerry Lewis character is unbearable, even worse than the other ones. And those are my favorite films growing up. You know, it's not he's likable.
Well, I don't know what that is. That's a Hollywood thing.
It's unbearable. I mean, truly, I can't, I'm like, I don't get it. You know, I love
films. Do you think it's uniquely American?
You know, I think there is a side. I don't think it's uniquely American. I think it's the times.
It's also executives panicking. Like, I don't know that, like, you know, you can't really look to executives to have some depth of understanding about what you're trying to do.
But you know why they're panicking? Because being in LA for 20 whatever years, I've noticed that there's always someone above them.
Yeah.
And they're always scared of that person above them, no matter how high they are.
That's right. It's just about, you know, having someone to blame.
Exactly. Like, and they're always scared to be the one.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
So people act out of fear in this country, and they're scared. And even critics sometimes will say, oh, you know, because they have something above them that say, why did you like this? You know, or why did you, you know, they... I think they're people are, it's a tough world out there.
Yeah, and fortunately, as time goes on, nothing fucking matters anymore. And, you know, there's so much out there that, like, how do you even determine, like, which critic, everything's an algorithm or amalgamation. Like, even Rotten Tomatoes, that's based on 100 critics or however many. It's a very odd thing we're living in.
Actually, six sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, who cares, you know?
Exactly. I mean, people go to that thing.
I know, but then in the end, it's the people watching are what matters.
Sure.
You know, and eventually people get to see things and... You know, that's
did Netflix
what I'm happy.
Get behind it? Did they, you know, did they? No.
No. No, because it's not a Netflix original, so they don't spend cent on publicity.
It's sort of there.
Yeah. And if it's, I mean, they threw it on the wall. If it sticks, it sticks, you know, and it's doing well, you know, it was like number 10, you know, a part of the 10 top for a while. And,
oh, good.
You know, and it's, people are still watching, so I'm lucky.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like I'm lucky. I mean, I can't say anything else because publicity-wise, there's nothing.
Yeah. How many did you direct?
Five.
Oh, that's good.
And Mathieu, the guy playing my husband, directed four.
Oh, wow.
And another director, David Petrarca, directed three. And I have to say, I think I did okay on the first three, but I think the screenplays were still, you know, but I did better on 11 and 12 than I did on 1, 2, 3. But, you know, it's like you can't.
You're hard on yourself?
No, it's not that. I know when I'm doing a good job and when I'm not as good, you know. And
it's hard to direct when you're in it.
Yeah, and when you're shooting in COVID time and you have so many limitations.
You got to really lean on the DP.
Yeah, no, everything. I mean, yeah, DP. And also you shoot 8 pages a day on this kind of show.
I know. It's crazy, right?
How many pages did you do like on the...
In the movie?
Yeah.
Well, on my show, we used to shoot... When I was doing Glow for Netflix.
Yeah, Glow.
Well,
that
was hard. There was a big thing. But like, how many did we do? Like, when I was doing my show for IFC, we'd do 8, 10 page days. It's crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's a lot.
Oh, yeah. It's nuts.
It's hard. It's hard to... I mean, I was pushing to do as many takes as possible because I really believe the more takes, the more choice you have for editing later.
Yeah.
But it is tough to do 8 to 10 pages.
But did you feel like... were you satisfied with the experience as a director? It must have been like... It seems like...
Yeah, there were times where I was really happy and times where I was frustrated because I didn't have enough time, obviously, when you have 8 pages per day.
But was it better than an experience of shooting a movie?
Because you have more time on movies.
Yeah.
I mean, on movies in France, you do 3.5 page a day.
Oh, really?
So you really have the luxury.
To work it.
Yeah. And also you have less hours per day. So you're kind of like, you know, relaxing a little bit, having long lunch.
Oh, that's nice.
It's kind of a holiday to shoot movies in France. and the producer
lovely.
I work with in France, he always picks the best canteen, the best food, because he loves food like me.
Oh, that's great.
So we're on the same page and he hires the top food person.
Are you a good cook?
I'm a great cook.
So that's why you made yourself a chef?
Well, I did relate to being a chef, yeah.
Yeah.
Or to cook with love, to give love through food, you know, something I do. Like, I feed people,
Yeah, you do?
My kid, I always make an effort to make him happy with my food.
Is it mostly French?
No, not at all. I make Italian. My mom was Italian. I make really good Mexican food. I make, I know it sounds weird, I make great Mexican food.
Oh, yeah. No, it's good.
I've learned to make. I make, from the Réunion Island, I make Vietnamese food. I make Japanese food.
So you love to cook.
I love to cook. And also ethnic, all sorts of Indian curries.
I find it very kind of...
you cook too, right?
I do, but I don't, I'm afraid of food. So, I limit myself. Like, I would never make pasta, really. Once or twice, I'll make it.
Because you're scared of food because of gaining weight?
Yeah,
I know that. I mean, I've heard you talk about that.
You don't have that fear?
No, I just gain weight. I mean, I have the fear, but I think my love of food is sometimes stronger than... You know, my fear.
I'd like to understand French cooking more. I know that's sort of the foundation of so much, but there's so much butter and so much cream.
Yeah, but I avoid that. That's why I avoid, I mean, I do very few French dish because of that. It's too much. Like, I do pot-au-feu, which is that meat cooked for hours stuff with vegetables, but there's no butter involved.
Right.
Like, I avoid the butter, cooked butter.
I can't deal with it.
It's too much. It's hard to digest. It's unbearable.
It's heavy, right?
Yeah. No, I try to cook healthy stuff because I know otherwise I'll look like my father in no time. Without the beard, which you can't hide the double chin.
Right.
He's lucky he can hide it with the beard.
With the big beard. So you said that you've had the experience that having a kid has eased your anger a bit?
Yeah. Yeah, it has. I mean, I still get angry, but it's never about him. Mm. It's always about injustice or business shit.
No shortage of that.
Yes. Mm. And also, you know, I get angry sometimes at how the business works.
Yeah.
But I don't express I don't snap at people, you know. I might have in the past, you know. But now I don't do that. Like, I don't snap. I don't get angry at people. If I get angry, it's at people way above me. You know, it's, for example, I never get angry at people that work for me or unless there's a big injustice being done and I'm being wrongly treated
for
the wrong reasons, some kind of frustration.
Righteous anger. But in general, you're not angry as much as you used to be.
No.
And I guess having a kid, you tap into a love that you didn't know you had.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is great. Yeah. I love him unconditionally. He's like the best thing in the world. And sometimes I get, you know, he does things that are not right. And I tell him to stop or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to set limits, even though he steps on me all day long on my head and do whatever he wants of me. I mean, he knows how to manipulate me any way possible.
And what
he's
about
extremely
that?
Smart, so
what
it's
about
complicated.
The dad?
Well, the dad is gone. He's there, but no, he's not gone. He's not part of my life.
Oh.
But he is part of my life.
Oh, that's right. Right.
Yeah, I'm separated.
But you're married again.
But I'm remarried.
Right.
Yeah, I'm remarried. And that's good because he has a great relationship with his stepdad.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
But and the other dad you deal with as...
Well, you know, it's the minutia of, you know...
Yeah, of being divorced.
Child custody stuff.
Yes.
And all that, the joy of sharing a child.
I have no kids. So, and I don't know any of this stuff. But that guy's here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So it's good. We're not too far away. And,
all right.
You know.
You deal with this.
Yeah. It's like the everyday. You get used to it.
Right.
At first, it's like traumatic, and then eventually.
Yeah, eventually you do it for the kid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So what's the plan now? What are you waiting to hear if you're going to get another season?
Yeah, waiting to hear. But I never wait to hear because I don't like that position. And no. I've been in that position as an actress.
So you did
it. Wait to hear. So I wrote a new script to do in France.
A movie?
A really fun movie to do with my dad. A French film.
Oh, that's great.
That I'm planning on. I'm writing an American film about a drama. About a guy that I met in... his story is pretty insane. A guy I met at a... when I was like living off my storage because I was fixing my house, I met this guy that was basically, you know, spending a lot of time there. And I discussed
the storage?
Yeah. I discussed his life and I told him I was going to write a film about him. He's like, fine.
He lived at the storage place?
Well, not living, but, you know, it was a difficult life he was going through.
In my show, I lived in a storage unit for a little while.
Really?
Yeah.
In it? Well, he was not living in it.
No,
I don't think
it.
You can do that anymore.
No, you're not supposed to.
Yeah, no, I know.
Yeah, it's funny though.
But it's, it's a different life. So I just was like talking to him and it was a really inspiring story. And so I'm writing something about him. I have a film that I have with Emilia Clarke that I wrote about the beginning of Hollywood, the pioneer of Hollywood.
Really?
Yeah. The very early days, like 1910.
You wrote it?
Yeah.
Wow. So you had to research all that.
Yeah. So for many years. Yeah.
So it's about the original Jews?
The original, actually, well, some, not all, but like a lot of them.
Yeah.
But also, you know, how the movie business was in, you know, in New York, in New Jersey, the studios in New Jersey.
Edison,
and,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And everything fell apart because of some crazy winter and they realized we can't keep on having the industry.
Yeah,
so.
And then they came out. Did you read Empire of Their Own?
No, I haven't read that. Okay, is that what it's about?
Well, no, it's just about those Jews that made the business.
Oh, that made the business. Yeah.
And that they built a vision of America that kind of stuck.
Yeah.
They invented a lot of things.
I know of that book, but I haven't read.
Yeah.
I know of that book.
Yeah.
Actually, I think the producer gave it to me, and I read part of it.
Yeah, I remember.
But it's been a while that I'm trying to get this film made.
What's the focus of the film? Who's the main character?
It's a family of vaudeville actors that decide to make a film and to move to Hollywood, and they're struggling. The truth is, it has a little bit. In essence, about my family a little bit of struggling, people struggling to survive in this business and the children. I mean, there's more children than my life, which was I was an only child. But there's a vibe to it, which I find very...
A family of vaudevillians. I always like that. Yeah.
So they become...
Sweet.
Yeah, it's very sweet. It's actually great for kids also. I think it's a bit of a kid's movie. There's
a
dark side
to
it. Yeah, because I don't wait for things because I hate... I hate that business in the sense that I hate when things don't work out. So I have a million things happening at once.
So you're not interested in, you know, really, you're only going to act in things you're making.
No, I love acting in other things. I did a film with Todd Solondz. I really enjoyed working with him, for example.
Okay.
Because it was really good dialogue.
Yeah.
I would act in films that I really like.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And I can do it because I'm doing other things, which is ideal.
And
I
mean, you
do your own stuff. So, you know, I mean, above
to act,
right?
Yeah, I mean, I just started really acting in the last few years, I think, you know, taking it seriously. But, I don't do anything I don't want to do.
Yeah, no, exactly, right?
Yeah, I don't.
But
I
that's
don't have
kind
to.
Of, I know it's a luxury, but it also comes with a price, which is sometimes, you know, not always.
Yeah, eventually they're going to be like, well, he doesn't want to do anything.
Yeah. Well, when you're a woman director, I can tell you, if you're an actress as well, like I am, it's complicated because people think, you know, I'm complicated.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I've worked on a film like a couple of years ago and the guy was constantly telling me, you're so easy. And I'm like, yeah, what were you expecting? That I was going to direct your film and bug everybody? I mean, like, on the contrary, actually, if anything, the fact that I do my own stuff, when I do someone else's thing, I'm sort of... compliant to, you know, whatever they want.
Right.
Because it's,
it's got,
you know, it's kind of relaxing on the, you know, and I want to have nothing to do with directing when I'm, you know, or writing.
That happens to me when I'm on sets where I see, like, I have to bite my tongue. Like, if you're paying attention to everything and you're just the actor, it's sort of like, I'm not going to fucking say anything.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why it's not my job.
I know. And but don't you isn't it? No, it makes sense,
right? It's good, but I do fight it.
Oh, you fight it?
Yeah, because sometimes I want to step in and be like, don't you think we, you know, but I'm like, no, it's not. Let them all do their jobs.
Yeah. I mean when I see their struggle, if I see someone struggling with a scene, you know, and it's happened to me a couple of times.
Well, no, I'm not talking
I will
about
suggest
acting,
something, like, yeah, maybe. Right, but right, suggest right. as like, what about, if we try it this way? You know, if something doesn't work in a scene, I feel like it's my duty, but also as an actress to help out with bringing, I mean, I've done it even with people like Kieslowski. We were doing a scene and he was like, I can't figure it out and stuff. And I was like, why don't you let me try something that comes naturally to me and tell me if it works? And that's Kieslowski. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
And I did the scene. I did something and basically he was happy with it. You know?
That's great.
He was like, why didn't you come? Why didn't you tell me earlier? We've been struggling for 2 hours, you know? And I was like, I didn't want to infringe on your
Well, yeah, work, as an actor, you know, to suggest choices and stuff. But sometimes I'm just, you know, like, I don't ever know, like, you know, because there's so much going on a set.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of times they're on top of things that I'm getting obsessed with and it's not going to matter ultimately. So I don't want to step in and be like, you know, don't you think we should move that chair? You know, like in that kind of shit. It's like, we're not shooting that right now. I'm like, all right. Like I get my brain just gets all on, you know, involved with everything. And I should just like, no.
No. So you, it's funny that you fight it because for me, I don't even look at it like this. I try to stay out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm learning, you know.
Yeah. You're learning. You're learning. No, I'm joking.
I gotta learn.
We're all learning. Yeah. We're all learning.
That was fun.
Fun. Thank you.
You feel good about it?
Yeah. I mean, did I say anything offensive? Because sometimes...
Like, no.
No. Sometimes I do without knowing, so I don't know what's offensive.
do you want to before we go?
Say something really offensive. No. I'm sometimes I say offensive things without knowing, so I'm just being careful nowadays.
Sure. I don't think so. Not really offensive,
but sometimes I even offend like my own woman, whatever situation or whatever.
Well, no, I think you're right. And my producer is very meticulous and very intelligent. So
they will pick on the...
Yeah, he'll take it.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Nice talking to you.
Thank you.
That was Julie Delpy. Wasn't that fun? That was fun. I enjoyed it. I like her. We're friends now. That's how that goes. On the Verge, the show is now streaming on Netflix. I'm going to play guitar now, and it wasn't until after I recorded it that I realized that the Fender Champ I was playing through has a fucked up speaker. So this will be the last time you hear this very specific, very honest tone. Monkey and LaFonda. Cat angels everywhere, man.